The clock is ticking. The Kansas legislature is running out of time to produce a new school finance formula, one that can satisfy the Kansas Supreme Court, which last year said the state was underfunding schools in violation of the Constitution. One lawmaker in the middle of the debate says while progress is being made, it's not fast enough. I'm Jim McLean. On this episode of State House Blend Kansas, the story of the legislature's increasingly frantic efforts to meet the court's end-of-the-month deadline. Stephen Caranda, State House Bureau Chief for Kansas Public Radios. We have hit the home stretch, at least, of the regular session of the Kansas legislature. And
the first home stretch of the year.
Right. Yeah, the first home stretch of the year. And legislators are determined to be out of here by April the 6th. It remains to be seen whether they can hit that deadline because they have one hugely important thing to do this week, and that is come to some sort of an agreement, at least the beginnings of an agreement, on how to finance public schools in response to the Kansas Supreme Court order. So that is job one, right?
Yeah, and I would say they're not just looking for the beginnings of an agreement. Lawmakers say it has to get done before they leave for their spring break. Here's Senate Vice President Jeff Longbine.
It is time. I will vote against any adjournment resolution until that solution is provided.
And I've heard this from more than one lawmaker. Some of them will not vote to go home without a plan because the attorneys need to start prepping briefs and getting ready to present it to the court. And I believe they have an April 30th deadline to do that.
Exactly. In fact, Attorney General Jerrick Schmidt was before the House Judiciary Committee this week talking about his angst about that very thing. He gave them a March 1st deadline, he said, and they blew
right
past it.
Which they bowled right through.
That's right. And so here's Attorney General Schmidt expressing his concerns about the timetable.
You've got to give the state's legal counsel, us, and the whole team enough time to understand what you've done, to digest what you've done, and to present that in a coherent and cogent manner to the court. And it simply takes time.
The Attorney General was talking to the House Judiciary Committee about the timetable, about the school finance issue generally, but also about the proposed constitutional amendment that is all tangled up in this question, Stephen. Generally speaking, what are they trying to do with this amendment?
There have been different, you know, proposals in the past, but what they're looking at right now would say the Constitution requires, I think it says, suitable provision for education, something like that. And their amendment would say that is up to lawmakers to decide what is appropriate to spend on education. And it says courts or anyone else can't usurp that power, can't undermine it. Lawmakers get to decide what's appropriate to spend on schools.
And most people that I talk to, at least, still believe that it's a long shot to pass because that requires a two-thirds vote of the legislature to put it on the ballot for then the Kansas voters to decide. Would you agree that that even though there's this big push behind it, it looks unlikely?
Yes, because let's take a look at the House. Without getting too far into the math, you have 85 Republicans and 40 Democrats, and you effectively have three factions: conservative Republicans, more centrist Republicans, and then the Democrats. And you have to basically get people from almost all three factions if you want to pass a constitutional amendment. Let's say they had something and they were going to look for only Republican votes. You can only lose two Republicans before the amendment fails. And so it's so hard to draft a constitutional amendment that can, for example, be attractive to both conservatives and moderates who are more likely to not want something that could block this type of legal fight in the future.
Mm-hmm. And just to show you how spot on you are with that analysis, here's Representative Melissa Rooker. She's a moderate Republican from Johnson County, from Fairway, and she says there's just no way that people who want to see this constitutional amendment put on the ballot have the votes to do that.
I do not see it having any chance of passing the House. I have no clue what goes on in the Senate, but it needs to pass both chambers, and I can tell you it will not pass the House.
People like Rooker, I don't think, like legal fights over education funding, but they look at it and say, the courts are right. Maybe we do need to take a harder look at how much we're spending on schools and increase it.
Yeah, and I think that, generally speaking, they look at the three branches of government and they think that the judicial branch is there to some degree, co-equal, is there to some degree to hold lawmakers accountable for living up to the language in the Constitution. So anyway, that issue is also being debated concurrently with the issue of how much money to spend on schools. But there are other things happening, particularly when you get to this point of the session, and the legislature has a special way of dealing with those issues. They stick them in conference committees. So, Stephen, for the uninitiated, what is a conference committee?
Well, the purpose of a conference committee is when the House passes a version of legislation and the Senate passes a different version of effectively the same legislation, they go to conference committee. Whatever compromise they reach, they send it back to both chambers. If the chambers approve it, then it goes on to the governor and becomes law. But this time of year, conference committees can do more than just that, because when they're working on a bill, for example, they can stick in other pieces of legislation into that bill. I mean, they could completely change what's in the bill and then send it back to the chambers. So its purpose is to smooth out differences between the chambers, but this time of year, it can also be a way for completely unrelated things or major changes to happen, which then go back to the chambers for a vote.
This is six members, three from the House, three from the Senate, sitting down at a table, and they're giving an awful lot of negotiating power to resolve some pretty thorny issues.
Often these really major issues, like budget and tax fights at the end of the session, are really settled in the conference committee. That's where the negotiations happen, and that's what whatever final agreement the leaders of the chambers want, that's where it will come out of.
A lot of work left to be done. Stephen Quaranta, thanks as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Representative Melissa Rooker continues to be at the center of Kansas's school finance debate. The very Republican is among the lawmakers who have crafted a plan. But like that old episode of Schoolhouse Rock taught us, it's not easy for a bill to become law. The story of this particular school finance bill starts last week. We sat down with Representative Rooker on the Friday before Monday's first crucial vote to get an understanding of what was in the bill.
The bill that will be debated on Monday was one that I pre-filed. It had the equity changes that the court was seeking in the opinion. And to that, we added a financial plan. And, you know, lots of people were talking numbers, but I don't know that there were any other amendments actually drafted that laid out a financial plan.
Let's talk a little bit about the various options that led to you formulating this plan. And let's just start with a description of the plan that is now up for consideration. Everybody likes to focus, as you said, on the actual number. Mm-hmm. And why don't you go into that? Because it's been widely reported that it's $522 million in additional money. But there's also money that was approved last session to go into schools. So when you aggregate all this, what are we talking about?
From 2018 through 2023, it's an increase of $823 million for our schools.
And why that number? Why is it? As you say, there's probably an element of compromise even in that number, but why did you settle on that number in terms of what the court wants you to do? Because the court very specifically said that there are some problems in the performance of certain students that really need to be attended to as evidence that the state is adequately funding schools. So why 823?
There's million? A logic model to the plan that we developed. There was a point in time when the legislature had achieved a constitutionally adequate level of funding.
And that was when?
That was the Montoy settlement, the 3 years mm-hmm. when that lawsuit was settled. So we started with the target in mm-hmm. Montoy, the high watermark, if you will. Mm-hmm. We never achieved it in reality, but we put it in statute. Our goal was $4,492 per pupil.
In base aid.
And that should have taken effect in the 2009-2010 school year. So we started with that number. We calculated what we should be spending today had we done nothing more than reach that target and keep up with inflation. What's remarkable is they align with the ballpark that the State Board of Ed set when they made their recommendation a couple years ago. We're not exactly on the same target, but it is in the neighborhood of what the State Board of Ed said they thought it needed. It's in the neighborhood of what the two studies of record were showing that we needed. And it, there's a logic to it that in the conversations that I've been having with colleagues to help bring people along to be supportive, there seems to be a realization that it really makes sense and that it's possible that the court will look at this and say, okay, we think you've shown your work.
When talking to Democratic leaders, I think one of the things that might keep them from supporting this, frankly, is the talk around the State House that there's that a new version of the quote-unquote constitutional amendment is a part of this deal, an amendment that essentially would be put to Kansas voters that would take the court, the Kansas Supreme Court, out of these deliberations in future years so that the court couldn't quote-unquote dictate to the legislature regarding funding. Is there a new version of that amendment that's a part of this deal?
I made no deal. That rumor was circulating that Rooker had agreed to support a constitutional amendment. I made no deal. And
there is a new amendment.
There is a new
amendment. But you haven't agreed to support it.
I made no such agreement. So, yes, there is. We've known all session long there is a faction that would like to see a constitutional amendment. I do not believe it has the votes in the House to pass.
Okay, and let's back up and let's talk. If I'm an average Kansans listening, who wants to be engaged, who wants to be informed, who's listening to this podcast, and the numbers are just absolutely, I tune them out because there's this number one week, another number on next week. You know, there's $2 billion in the headline, $600 million. Now the 522/823. I mean, it's impossible for average people to keep track of that. So if we end up spending something like what you're suggesting, what do we get for it in the classroom? What practical effect should Kansans look for in the classroom?
Improvement. Improvement in our student attainment levels. We should see improved achievement on the standardized test, improved achievement after kids leave high school, improved graduation rates, improved post-secondary success. That is ultimately the goal, is to help provide the support system in our schools so that kids can thrive. Mm-hmm. And so part of our plan very specifically directs additional resources to special education services. I think there's been a lot of pressure around the state. We've had a lot of different hearings on topics that all seem to dial back to the stress on schools providing the resources that kids with special needs require.
Because just the way the legislature works, it's unlikely that everybody's going to step onto the floor and say, this is it, eureka, I'm voting
right.
for it, done. This debate will continue in one way or another probably until the very end of the session. But you're hopeful that this proposal at least provides a really good starting point for a conversation that you might be able to wrap up relatively quickly?
I fingers crossed. Say your prayers this weekend. I think we need to succeed in moving the bill on Monday out of the House and over to the Senate. I think we need to be thoughtful and careful, but we also have such a looming deadline. And if you know, we're a month beyond the desired date the Attorney General mm-hmm. suggested in December to get his office the plan.
Would you do us a big favor, once the debate occurs on Monday and we see how it turns out and the dust settles, could we get you back for a real quick post-mortem conversation on that?
I'd be delighted.
The school finance bill that Rooker helped write failed its first test on the House floor. It needed 63 votes, but got only 55. After that defeat, House leaders went to work, getting a handful of members to change their votes. A proposed constitutional amendment was a key discussion point in those overnight negotiations. An amendment sought by conservative Republicans that, if put on the ballot and approved by Kansas voters, would essentially take the Supreme Court out of the school funding debate in the future. It would be up to the legislature, and only the legislature, to set spending levels. Senator Ty Masterson is a conservative Republican from Andover, and he says House leaders had to promise to pass such an amendment to get the votes they needed to advance the funding bill.
They agreed to be part of the process in return for passage of a constitutional amendment. There are enough votes there right now that will not vote for that very same bill if there is not a constitutional amendment.
And just to make sure I'm clear, it's not simply that a constitutional amendment will be considered and to get a vote on the floor, it has to pass in order for those people to stay with the bill?
That's correct. Their impression is that they are under no obligation to vote on anything further until there's a constitutional amendment passed. And even in our Senate caucus, it was clear from our leadership. They said, we will not move on any education finance until a constitutional amendment passes the House and the Senate.
Rooker says no one in leadership can promise that something will pass. But she says it appears clear that the House will be voting on a constitutional amendment.
I'm not one who's afraid of the process, so let's have that vote. I'll go on the record. I will be voting no. And I've been really clear from the beginning that I will be voting no. So there was no trade that I'm aware of, but you know, who knows how people were persuaded overnight. I really don't know.
Whatever promises were made, they seem to have done the trick. In the space of 24 hours, the school funding bill picked up 16 votes, and it passed 71 to 53. But it still has its critics, House Minority Leader Jim Ward for one. The Wichita Democrat says it doesn't increase spending enough to satisfy the court.
Last year's bill put $522 million over a five-year period of time. We're spending $200 of that now, this year, okay? That leaves $320 left, and we added $185 million, which is that $500 million figure you all have been using in the press. I don't think that's it. You look at the five studies that have looked at what we demand of schools, and I just don't think that that meets the mark. It doesn't solve the problem or end in the litigation.
When I sat down with her one final time after the vote, Rooker said if it were up to her, the bill would include more money. Still, she says it's a reasonable compromise, one that she thinks could at long last get the state out of court.
I think the people, the critics of it are, you know, they're applying inflation and they are taking out certain factors that were in the appropriations bill last year for future years and using that to reduce the number. But the straight up appropriation from one year to the next amounts to $823 million. I don't want to put this plan up on a pedestal as a guaranteed solution to this court case, but it's the first time in a lot of iterations of legislation that over the years that we have sent to the court that I believe we have a foundation that a legal case can appropriately be hung on. And I think there's a rationale for how we arrived at the numbers. And I am hopeful that the court will see fit to adjudicate this in a way that allows us to put this lawsuit to rest and carry on with the state's business.
I get a lot of advice when I'm doing interviews like this to stay out of the political weeds. And we did that the other day. We talked pretty forthrightly about what this would mean in the classroom for students and for parents. But really the most important matter at hand is what you just talked about, which is, can this legislature put something in front of the Kansas Supreme Court that the justices say, yeah, that gets us there, that gets rid of this litigation for a while? So that really is the number one question at hand. And what I heard you just say is that you think that the bill that has passed the House now has a reasonable chance of satisfying the court?
I think it has a reasonable chance, yes. I can't promise that it will. I can't guarantee that. None of us can. But I'm not embarrassed by this offer. We still have this boulder is halfway up the mountain. The Senate is working on an entirely different plan with a significantly amount less money. And that will all have to come together in a conference committee. And I think, you know, there is concern expressed that as you go into negotiations that the House should have, you know, that was the rationale for wanting a higher number in our bill to start with, that, oh, well, you have to have a number to back down from in negotiations to compromise. Well, there is a lot of policy where there can be give and take in a conference, but the way it works is you have to bring the conference committee back to the House and to the Senate, and each chamber has to vote. And this is my sixth legislative session. Honest to God, the third time something fails is usually when the other side caves in. So we just need to hold a firm House position, and until we see what's acceptable to us.
Big thanks to Representative Melissa Rooker for being our guide through this initial phase of the school funding debate, a debate that must produce a plan soon if the state's lawyers are going to have any chance of presenting a coherent case when they go back to the Supreme Court at the end of the month. I'm Jim McLean. Thanks for listening. We'll stay on top of this story and all the others so that we can give you the very latest when you join us again next week for another edition of State House Blend, Kansas.